Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, coming to you from TCO Studios at Winter Park. Producer Nate Vaughn is here, and we have a special guest host with us this week. Just as we did last week with Craig Peters, we have another one of our VEN writers with us. It's Lindsay Young. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we have a jam-packed show. Lindsay has a lot to offer. The primary reason we brought her in is she was down at the Pro Bowl with like 6,000 Vikings and Vikings fans who were down there and taking all that in and having lots of fun. So we're going to get to that. We're going to talk about the Pro Bowl and Lindsay's experience there and all that she took in and saw. We have a bunch of other stuff to talk about on this show as well, including some off-season events that are coming up, three reasons you should care about the draft. We'll get to some fan mail and a lot more. First off, Lindsay, I see I have your name spelled wrong on this outline. Are you mad at me for that?
I'm a little bit irked, but in the first sentence you have it correct, so I'm going to just let it go.
Oh, I do wear.
But I'm a little bit OCD, so I had to fix it. Up here on the top, it's
okay,
correct.
Good, good, yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
So it's good. So I know you know how to spell
so
it.
So when I tell you I know how to spell your name, you believe me.
Yes,
so
absolutely, right, yep. Yeah.
Is it A or E?
Which do you think it is,
it's
Nate?
E, right?
It's yeah.
E. Yeah, it's E. That would be terrible for me to not know how to spell it, but I do. Before we talk about all the stuff that we have on this outline that I talked about, a quick Winterfest promotion. Join us February 16th to 18th this year. Celebrate winter as only the North knows how at Polaris Vikings Winterfest. Join us in Prior Lake February 16th to 18th for a weekend filled with winter activities. Our flagship, the Vikings flagship, KFAN, will have a couple of radio programs going on during Winterfest. I believe Captain Munnerlin is scheduled to be a guest on one of them. Lots of other fun events, including a pancake breakfast, plenty of other player appearances, and a concert by Hairball, a group I've seen plenty of times, and they can be a lot of fun too. So this is the event formerly known as Arctic Blast, which is now Winterfest and will be held in the metro this year. It's normally an outstate event, but this year it's going to be held in the metro area. So for all of those who have attended Arctic Blast in the past, this is that event. You'll have fun. For all of those who have not, check it out for the first time this year. It's Winterfest. A couple of other things on the calendar, guys, to talk about. The next big thing for the NFL is Combine, which is kind of like the unofficial start of the next season.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
You know, I mean, the playoffs are over, the Super Bowl is over, and the number one event in the offseason is the draft. And this is kind of the event that kicks off the path to the draft, as the NFL Network calls it, and really the up, you know, the next season. And it's Nate and I always joke, Lindsay, that you know we don't know a lot about the college players right now, but right. By the time we come back from the combine, it's like you know we're experts.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we're suddenly experts on these guys.
And it gets the average fan excited too, because if we're able to put out some of this content on the guys at the combine, you know, it's kind of a draft prep.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the next big thing coming up in the calendar. After that, and actually right after we get back from the combine, is free agency, the start of the new league year and free agency. That's on March 9th. So the combine is 19 days away. Free agency is 28 days away. And then, as we said, the biggest event of the NFL offseason is the NFL draft on April 27th. That is 77 days away. So a lot going on in the NFL calendar right now. Speaking of the draft, guys, I have three reasons that Vikings fans should still care about the draft, even though we don't have a first-round pick. Because whenever I bring up the draft or it's brought up to me with people, it's easy for some people to have a lack of enthusiasm compared to years past about the draft because we don't have a first-round pick. But the draft is more than one round.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you look at the players we've gotten recently in the later rounds, I feel like that gives you more reason to be excited.
Right. I agree with that. So the three reasons are Rick likes to trade. So we've seen him trade up a couple of times to get back into the first round.
Exactly.
So it won't surprise us if he decides to do that this year and gets up into the first round. Number two, the positions that a lot of people are projecting the Vikings may address, other than offensive line, are positions that are fun to think about and to watch. Like these are guys, it's wide receiver, running back, and D-end a lot.
Right.
Or defensive line.
Right.
And these are positions where you can search people's names in YouTube and watch highlight clips of them. Mm-hmm. Right? So
exactly.
It makes it kind of fun.
Right.
And so when fans are thinking about who we're going to take, you're going to see running back, DN, quarterback, a lot of fun positions. And lastly, we have five picks in the first four rounds. So we don't have one in the first, but we have five picks in the first four rounds. As Lindsay said, with how the Vikings have drafted recently, there's plenty of reasons to be excited about what Rick and the Vikings can do with those five picks in the first four rounds. Okay, going to Pro Bowl. It was your first trip to the Pro Bowl.
It was.
I've never been to the Pro Bowl.
Really?
I have not.
I've done something that you haven't done.
Yes. Wow. You've gone to the Pro Bowl. And it wasn't in Hawaii. I think a lot of people associate the Pro Bowl with Hawaii.
Right.
It wasn't there. It was at, and I've never been to Hawaii, but so I can't say that it was in a better place than Hawaii, but it was in a place that I love, Orlando and Disney World.
I love Orlando. Yeah. I was so excited. Everybody, like, you know, felt bad for me that it wasn't in Hawaii, but I had a blast.
Right. So tell us about it. I'm sure that you could talk for 20 minutes straight about it, but run us through, you know, some of the bullet points from the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I really had a great time. I mean, like you mentioned, there were so many, there was such a big Vikings presence down there that it made it really fun, and it made it seem really worth it to be down there and covering it. With six players down there, there never seemed to be a dull moment because there's always someone doing something. Mm-hmm. It had sort of a training camp feel as far as the practices and the walkthroughs and kind of getting to watch how they worked through that. Mm-hmm. It was a really interesting atmosphere to see because there are all these players that usually face each other, and they're now hanging out and they're on the same team. Like the two that stood out to me kind of throughout the week that were talking back and forth was like Xavier Rhodes and OBJ, you know, and like them playing against each other this year was so much fun. And then seeing them in this kind of different context, that was a different perspective, but one that I enjoyed.
Yeah. How about the being around our players away from Winter Park? Was there any experiences there that you appreciated or you thought were notable? Was that kind of a cool part of it?
Yeah, that was definitely interesting. And I think maybe that's where a little bit of the training camp feel came in as well, because they were sort of not in their normal environment that we see them in all the time here. So, so that was a really interesting feature of it. And also seeing them beyond interacting with the other players, seeing them do community events that were outside of the Twin Cities community. Mm-hmm. So that was really interesting because obviously it's in Orlando. It's not in a community where they're in full time. They're not familiar with the fans over there, but they still had this, you know, passion to make a difference. And there were so many fans down there that may have been fans of other teams, but they were able to connect with some of our guys and get to meet them and in more of a casual environment than maybe before or after a game.
Do you think, you know, they didn't have it in Hawaii? Now, Hawaii is a place that a lot of tourists go.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, with it being in the continental United States, did you sense there were a lot of people who were, like, at Disney or in Orlando, and it was like, oh, wow, the Pro Bowl is here. Cool, I'm going to go check some of that out.
Absolutely. We talked to several fans who it maybe wasn't so chance as that, but that they kind of planned things in a particular way so that they could do both.
Yes.
We talked to a few different Vikings fans who were like, yeah, we needed to escape winter. We wanted to bring the family down to Disney. We knew the Pro Bowl was here this year too, so we're kind of doing both.
Yeah.
There was one Vikings fan that was there on a business trip that like found a couple hours to get away and go to one of the Vikings practices.
Cool.
So it definitely had a little bit of it was still touristy, but it had a little bit of a different vibe. I think there were a lot of families there, just kind of your average Joes that were able to come and check it out. And that, you know, made the atmosphere really fun and energetic too.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe the last one on the Pro Bowl, a lot of people are like, they should get rid of the Pro Bowl. They should do this to the Pro Bowl, whatever. Right. Did you sense that the players liked being there? Like, if you took the Pro Bowl away, the players would be bummed out about that.
Yeah. So that was an interesting thing to look at, because I know that there's a lot of debate over, is there worth to having the Pro Bowl? Is it just a waste of time? And from the players' perspective, you could see that they really enjoy it. And I think for a number of reasons. Like, one, I think it's a legitimate honor and respect thing to be voted in. And so that's huge for them. And also just the entire experience of being there for the week, being there with their teammates, or if not with their teammates, with other players from around the league. So from my perspective, it seems like a really valuable thing for the players involved.
Yeah. And then the players all were able to bring a youth coach with them, right? Mm-hmm. Like someone who they had played for in their younger days, right? So that was another component of the Pro Bowl at the NFL is doing to try and mix it up and add different elements to it as the youth coaches. So did you see any of our guys interacting with their coaches?
Yeah, that was an interesting feature. And according to Sam Newton in PR, mm-hmm. he said that the Vikings had the highest percentage of participation for that program. So out of our six players that were there, Anthony Barr was the only one who didn't have a coach there. And that was just because he was a later ad. Yeah. And so we had five players that had coaches there, and that was really cool. Four of them were high school coaches, and then Cordarrelle had a youth coach there with him. But that was really cool. Probably the best experience was the one that, you know, we put up on Vikings.com where Everson kind of walked into the interview that we were doing with his high school coach and surprised him. And you can just see how significant the experience is for the coaches, but also for the players. So that was sort of an emotional part of the week that was cool to observe.
Last one here again. We were talking to Jordan Struck, who went down for VEM, one of our shooters and editors, and he said that Odell Beckham Jr. is a guy who his perception of this player changed after being at the Pro Bowl with him. You know, he thought, so I want to know for you, was there a player that, you know, your mind has been changed or your perception has been altered based on being down there with him? Because he said, you know, with Odell Beckham, you see a lot of the antics on the sideline and you see him in the headlines for a lot of different reasons. But down at the Pro Bowl, he was a gregarious guy. He was nice. All the players got along with him, like you said, with Xavier. Mm-hmm. He and Xavier were going back and forth. Did you notice that same thing with him? And then is there any other player that maybe you had a similar experience with?
I did. I can agree with what Jordan said on Odell Beckham Jr. And then one for me, which I'm not sure Vikings fans will appreciate hearing this, but one for me was actually Richard Sherman. Oh. And I was looking forward to seeing him in that sort of atmosphere because I actually have a friend who used to be the trainer for the Seahawks, and he's always talked so highly of Richard Sherman, and it seemed like the picture he painted of him was different than the one that we see in the media so much. And so I wasn't really sure what to expect, but he really does seem like a great guy, really seemed to connect with most of the players down there, just had a good time. He was there with his family, so got to see him interacting with his family and his kids a little bit. So I guess that would be one for me.
Okay. Cool. Well, that's the Pro Bowl. We'll put a wrap on that, and we'll go to the game that happened 1 week later, the Super Bowl. 114-plus million watched the Super Bowl this year. Were you two in that group?
Yeah, I was safe in that group.
Nate, you watched it? Okay, me too. Lindsay?
I was also in the group. Right. I had to watch it with my dad.
Okay. Oh, yeah, good. A lot of things to break down from the Super Bowl, so... rather than talking about a few things for a long time, let's talk about a lot of things for a short time.
Sounds good.
Okay, I want to start with the Brady Belichick legacy. More so with Tom than with Bill, but I think with both of these guys, to me, they pretty much solidified their status as the best at what they do. Brady, the best quarterback of all time, and Belichick, perhaps the best coach of all time. They play in different eras, you know, players play in different eras, Johnny Unitas and Joe Namath and Otto Graham and Red Grant. Like, I mean, there's just so many different eras, so it's hard to compare.
Right.
But if we were put on, you know, if we were in a room and it was like, okay, you got to argue, best quarterback of all time. Lindsay, you get Joe Montana. Nate, you get John Elway. And I get Tom Brady. Like, I'm very happy that I have Tom Brady. I think I can make a very good argument there. Do you guys agree with that?
You could be bad at arguing and still win that.
Okay,
argument.
So you guys feel that
that's
way too.
That's a fair assessment.
And the reason I bring it up, it's kind of like a no duh topic, but you know, let's not be prisoners of the moment either. Like, it's very easy to be a prisoner of the moment the night that they win. You know, Tom Brady wins his fifth Super Bowl; he's the greatest ever. But you know, a week later, the dust settles, and maybe you don't feel that way about it. But I think it's kind of hard to argue any other way now.
I would agree with you, but does it? I don't know if does it change. If that makes sense, but is the story better because of how late he was drafted? Like, would we be talking the same way if he was a number one overall pick?
I think that him being a sixth round pick definitely enhances.
It at least makes the story better. I mean, it doesn't change what he's done.
Right.
But.
And I think winning and when you were losing by 25 and winning the way they did, that helps it too.
Yep.
Nobody had come back to win a Super Bowl from being down by more than 10 points.
Right.
And they were down by 25.
Right.
And you just knew at a certain point that it was going to happen.
I kind of think that way too. And that brings me to the next bullet point. Did you at any point ever think about turning the TV off to stop watching the Super Bowl?
No.
Why?
Well,
It was 28-3. I didn't either. I think all three of us are no. You're no?
Okay, I'm going to be really embarrassed to say yes, but I'm going to make my case though, okay. Here in a second.
No, you go first. I want to hear this.
Okay, so you did think about it.
I did, yeah. And I'm really honestly embarrassed to say that because I love the Super Bowl, but I was watching at my parents' house, mm-hmm. and they were up by 25 points. And what I said was, I'm really tired. I would love to get on the road and just watch a few minutes when I get home. So I was sort of like, I can see where this game is going. Let me just flip it on in the radio on the way home, catch the end of it, not get home so late.
Okay.
But I did not end up doing that.
Oh, you didn't?
I did not end up doing that because we reached a certain point in the game where I sat back down and said, clearly I cannot leave right now.
Okay, great. Oh,
but, okay, so you did watch the end.
I did, yeah. I watched it from start to finish, but I did think about taking a hiatus.
The only thing I did was, you know, my wife, Allie, was basically like, I'll put the kids to bed tonight. Like, you don't have to worry because there's three of them. So it's a team thing. It's a team effort to put everyone to bed. And she's like, So right before halftime, I was like, don't worry, I'll take Isla. So I missed like, you know, 4 or 5 real time minutes of the game while I was doing that.
Sure.
I would not have done that if it would have been 10-10 or 13-10. But that's back, you know, I was back before halftime.
Right.
So I watched the whole halftime show and the whole second half. I never thought about turning it off. And I think it's because it was the Patriots. I think that I'm just going to pick two random teams. If Cincinnati was beating the Giants 28-3 at one point, I may have flipped away from the game and come back later or chased it on my phone or something like that.
Right.
But because it was Brady, Belichick, and the Patriots, I didn't even think about turning it off.
When they were initially down by, like we said, 25, it was sort of comical to still think about it as, they're still going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was thinking in my mind, but like I said, at that time it was more of a joke.
Right.
But then you could kind of feel it starting to happen.
Right.
And so then I got to say, oh, well, I knew it all along.
Yeah.
At one point, I remember my dad saying, if anybody could come back from this deficit, it would be Tom Brady, but it can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it did.
And then it did. Yeah. Famous last words. Okay. If you had to pick a turning point in this game, what would it be? And for me, and this is me being honest too, it was the field goal that got them to 16 points.
Okay.
And a lot of people were probably like, oh, they kicked a field goal. Like, it's good. They're going to need more than field goals. But mm-hmm. that got them to 2 scores.
Right.
And it's just, there are just certain types of leads that get you to be nervous or shake your head or be skeptical. If you're up by 6, I hate being up by 6. That's mm-hmm. the worst. Touchdown and extra point beats you. To me, 16 is one of those numbers because it's a big enough number for the team that's ahead to be complacent.
Right.
And it doesn't mean the whole team is complacent. If just a couple of guys are complacent and they're the right guys, that's bad for you. And 16 is a big enough number to cause complacency, but it's a small enough number for a tough-minded team to know that they're still in it. So to me, it was the field goal.
Well, if the Patriots would have lost, I would have said that I think it was a third down play. Julian Edelman had basically a first down if mm-hmm. he would have caught the ball.
Right.
And he did not catch the ball.
Was it over like a slant over the middle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, I think it was the third quarter. Mm-hmm. So if the Patriots would have lost, I would have pointed to that play and be like, you know, that's the moment where you're just like, oh, well, they didn't have it tonight.
Wasn't their night. Yeah.
And that's what most people probably thought. That's what I thought for a split second before I reminded myself that they were going to win.
Before you reminded yourself that you knew all along what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a big play. But I'm going to take 2 plays here. Mm-hmm. But it was the Julian Edelman crazy catch. So a Julian Edelman drop and then a Julian Edelman crazy catch.
Okay, I was in the bathroom for that part and it was really annoying that I missed it.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen it since though.
Yeah, I have.
Hard not to.
When a play like that happens, you're like, okay, well, we know what's going to happen the rest of the game.
Okay, Interesting.
Okay, so for me, I'm going to mark the turning point as the point where I decided to not get in the car. Mm-hmm. And it was less of a positive turning point for New England and more of a negative turning point for Atlanta is when Matt Ryan got sacked and fumbled.
Yeah.
And I said, this shouldn't be a big thing, but it's going to be a big thing because this is going to be the momentum that New England needs to like get on a roll. And I feel like that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and they were able to score quickly after that. They didn't have to do a 6-minute drive that, you know, was 12 plays and
Exactly. Yeah,
allowed for a quick score. Okay. When in your mind did you switch from if I had to predict this game? I would pick New England because for me, it wasn't until they scored the 2-point conversion to tie because I was like, I know that they can score two times and hold Atlanta from scoring and, and get to 12, you know, get to two touchdowns, 12 points, but converting the 2-point conversions, that's tough. So when they got the second one and tied the game, I was like, this game's going to overtime. And I think that New England's going to win, even though the Falcons still had 56 seconds in the fourth quarter to get the kickoff and get into field goal range and maybe win the game. Even knowing that, I still would have picked New England once they got that second 2-point conversion.
So I was more of a believer than you at this point in the game because when it got to be an 8-point game, I said it's over.
Okay.
Like New England's going to win.
Yeah.
The conversation at our house was they still have to score again. They still have to do another 2-point conversion. And I was like, well, they made it look pretty easy just now. Mm-hmm. And it was like they just had all of the energy. But I would agree. I mean, as soon as they went into overtime, it feels like if you let a team come back, go into overtime.
Atlanta had no shot in overtime. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Feeling wise, I would say the play Lindsay talked about earlier, the forced fumble on Matt Ryan. But when they had it was that the second unbelievable catch by Julio Jones. And then like the next two plays, I think it was a sack and then a holding penalty.
Yep.
So they were well within field goal range. They could have kicked a field goal and gone up by two scores. They ended up outside of field goal range after those two plays and didn't get any points. That's when I knew.
New England was going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, last one on this. What was one decision that you would take back for Atlanta if you could? Mine is a play that Nate just referenced. It was second and 11. Atlanta had the ball second and 11, and Matt Ryan got sacked. On that play, I think if Kyle Shanahan could go back and do it over again and he would just run the ball on that play, I think they would have had a field goal attempt to try and they probably would have made it. So if Atlanta could take back just one thing from the whole game, I think it's the second and 11 play call.
All right. So mine is, I don't know if you can call it a decision, but a mistake that happened. And I hope that I get this right, but it was on the Falcons' last drive where if they could have been able to kick a field goal, they would have given themselves some breathing room and I think won the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
But was it on second down that there was a holding penalty that moved them back? And then on third down, he ended up getting sacked. And so then they were at like third and 33 and well out of field goal range.
Yeah.
But there was a penalty there
on
that drive.
It was
drive.
A holding penalty.
Yeah. Yep. So for me, that was the penalty.
Yeah. And I think that there was a completed pass. Wasn't that a completed pass too?
Yeah.
So they picked up yardage to get back some of the negative yardage.
Right.
Okay. So the holding penalty.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
I'm going to go with the easy one. That turned out to be the Matt Ryan forced fumble. It was, what was it, third and one?
Yeah.
They could have ran it even if they didn't get it. You know, that's a chunk of time off the clock, tried to throw it, and it was a forced fumble.
Interesting that none of us chose the challenge of the Julian Edelman catch because after watching it 1,000 times in slow motion, it's very clear that was a catch.
Right.
And Atlanta could have used a timeout in its last drive of the game to try and get into field goal range. Now, we are not even Monday morning quarterbacking. I mean, it's been many, many days since the Super Bowl, and we're second guessing some of these decisions that they had to make in the heat of the moment.
Right.
But it's just fun to do when you look back on the Super Bowl.
Definitely.
Looking back on the Super Bowl, one of America's favorite pastimes, Super Bowl commercials. Favorite Super Bowl commercial for you guys? I will start. Mine was the Christopher Walken, Justin Timberlake buy commercial for two reasons. One, Christopher Walken is amazing. I love every character that he's ever been.
Yep.
I think he can be a great villain, and he can be a funny main character. I think he's awesome. But secondly, that company, which makes some sort of healthy, nutritious drink, I mean, there are a lot of people, myself included, who maybe didn't know the name of that company.
Like, that's true.
It's BAI is how you spell it. Is it Bai? Is it Bay? Is it what? Like, what is it? And you learned in a very catchy way. So now you won't forget, because you're going to associate it with, you know, bye. Yeah.
Yep.
So I thought that was a great commercial. It was my favorite. Admittedly, I didn't see all of them. But the ones that I did see, that one stood out to me.
What about you, Lindsay?
Do I have to just pick one?
Start with your favorite, and then.
Okay. Well, okay.
You're laboring over this right
I
now.
I am, because there were so many, like, they fall into different categories for me, and I have a really hard time making a decision. My favorite, like, funny commercial, we'll go with that, was the Melissa McCarthy Kia commercial, where she was kind of this, you know, eco-friendly, trying to save the world, and I thought that was really funny. I'm biased because I really love Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, you had me at Melissa McCarthy.
I think she's hilarious. And so as soon as I saw it was her in the commercial, I was like, this is going to be fantastic. So that would be my pick.
Yep. Well, what are your other categories?
Well, I also had a charming category.
Charming, okay. Charming. Of course, who doesn't?
Yep. So I liked the Honda yearbook commercial. I just thought it was fun to see all the different actors in their old yearbook photos. And then even though I don't normally like the emotional commercials, the one that I felt like was really well executed, and maybe it's because I'm a female, was the Audi commercial. It was the one with the little girl driving the derby car. I thought that one was really well executed.
Okay, cool. Nate?
I have two.
Okay.
I had to look at a top 10 Super Bowl commercial list to remind myself of them. But I really liked the Squarespace one with John Malkovich.
Okay.
Where someone bought the URL johnmalkovich.com. And he's just losing his mind, and he ends up calling the phone number that's connected to it, and he just loses his mind. And I just think it's funny when people
and
go
so
crazy.
It's a commercial for a company that you can buy URLs from.
Yeah, it's like a website development company that like you or I could make our own websites fairly easily with.
Got it.
And then I also always look forward to the avocados from Mexico commercials.
Yeah.
There's always the only time
that's
of year I
one.
Ever see one
yeah.
is during the Super Bowl.
No Clydesdales, right?
I didn't see any.
So.
No Budweiser Clydesdales.
They had the dog. Okay, was that did Budweiser have the dog instead? The little floating dog, was that Budweiser?
I'm not sure.
I don't remember.
But they had
it was like
you know,
the Ghost of Christmas Past, but it was a dog.
The Budweiser Dalmatian with the Clydesdales. I mean, I didn't see
they
that.
They didn't have any. It was bizarre.
Okay.
No puppies.
Yeah. And then halftime show, were you guys thumbs up or thumbs down on it?
I
thought
I
it was cool.
It.
I liked it.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think anything can ever really beat Left Shark, though. Like, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, Left Shark lives in infamy, that's for sure. Okay, let's get to some fan mail. You got them in front of you, Nate?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let me read. The first one is from Gerald. Gerald says, the stat that stuck out to me the most from the Super Bowl was New England ran 93 plays and Atlanta only had 46. Mm-hmm. They also maintained possession advantage of 40 minutes, 31 seconds to 23 minutes, 27 seconds. Mm-hmm. That needs to be the blueprint for offense. We need to keep our defense fresh. Atlanta's coach said they got tired. Whoever controls the clock wins almost every time. Next year is our year.
Okay. Gerald's right that time of possession was obviously something that New England dominated in this game. And given the fact that Atlanta has the number one scoring offense in the NFL, it probably helped them win the game in the second half that Matt Ryan was on the bench. And in fact, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman pointed out that at one point, right before halftime and then going into the second half, Atlanta was over 1 hour of real time since they had last been on the field. So I think it's good anytime you can hold a high-scoring offense off the field. With that being said, I think sometime time of possession, that stat, and Lindsay, you've written enough stories after a game to know, like, sometimes I think time of possession is something that you win as a function of having won the game. It's not something that you do that helps you win. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
For example, if you've played well enough to be ahead by 10 points going into the fourth quarter, I mean, 80% of your plays are going to be running plays in the fourth quarter, so you're going to consume time.
Right.
So I don't know how important time of possession is in the game generally. I think there can be games where it's important to win time of possession, like it was for New England in the Super Bowl. But
I think it's more of a result stat versus being the reason do too. For something.
I kind of do, too.
I mean, take that with a grain of salt.
Kansas. Okay, these playoff teams, Kansas City, Oakland, the Giants, Detroit, and Atlanta, all made the playoffs. None of them had time of possession advantages for the season, for the balance of the season.
Oh, interesting.
Kansas City, on average, lost the time of possession battle by 9 minutes.
Wow.
Same for the Giants. Detroit lost time of possession on average 13 minutes.
Wow.
Atlanta was 1 minute loser in time of possession on average, and the Raiders were a 7 minute loser in the time of possession battle. So teams like Dallas, Houston, New England, Green Bay won, and Dallas was dominant, won in time of possession. Other teams, though, were not. So I just don't know that it's a critical variable.
Sure.
Question number two.
Mm-hmm.
Hayden asks, what do you think about the possibility of moving Alex Boone outside to tackle? Do you think he has a skill set to play that position and play it well?
Interesting. This came up during the season, Lindsay,
mm-hmm.
late in the season, where Alex Boone basically volunteered to move outside to play tackle.
Right.
Given what we went through with injuries, you can certainly see why. And I think whenever a player has that idea and then gets to do it, I think there's an added chance of it working out because he's extra motivated.
Right.
But, you know, we'll see what happens here. I guess when it comes to the offensive line, nothing's going to surprise me what we do, because it's going to be a point of emphasis for us this offseason, don't you think?
Yeah, totally agree.
And so maybe he will move out there, maybe he won't. I think he's athletic enough to do it, but I also think he's pretty good at guard. And if you could have Khalil and Boone for a full season at left tackle and left guard, I'd like to see what that looks like, because we were excited about that going into the year.
Right.
And then we didn't get to see it because Matt got hurt early. So,
question number three is from Bill. Bill says, it's my impression that Shermer's philosophy matches Coach Zimmer's, in that you find the ways to succeed with the talent you have rather than finding the precise talent to fit a preconceived scheme. How does this attitude or philosophy affect the way you approach free agency and the draft?
Yeah, I think that is Shermer's philosophy, but I think that's basically every coach's philosophy.
I mean, I think it almost has to be for you to be at this level and to be doing well,
yeah,
to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you see any more coaches trying to fit square pegs into round holes. I just don't think you see that anymore. So that Shermer is now the offensive coordinator, which he wasn't at this time last year, I don't think it alters the Vikings' approach in either free agency or the draft. I view free agency as you can go get players that fit a need for you.
Right.
And I view the draft as just get good players.
Mm-hmm.
Fair?
Yeah, I think so.
Finally, question number four from Ian. Let's just say, for some fantasy fun, the Vikings shocked the NFL and traded for either Richard Sherman or Patrick Peterson. Which one of them would make a more intimidating duo alongside our guy, Xavier Rhodes?
All right, let's go around the room. What do you guys think? Lindsay? See, I feel comfortable doing this because there's not a wrong answer. Both these guys are all pros and pro bowlers.
Right.
So I think the question is, if you were the quarterback, you don't want to see either of these guys.
Right.
But what strikes more fear in you?
My gut says Richard Sherman, but I think that may also just be because I've been more familiar with watching him as a player than Patrick Peterson. So I don't think I can give like a super technical or informed answer on this. Other than that, I think Richard Sherman would scare a quarterback, and it'd be interesting to see those two play together.
I'm going to go with Richard Sherman as well, because the question asks which is more intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
I think intimidation is just part of Richard Sherman's game.
So do I.
More so than Patrick Peterson.
Exactly what I was going to say.
That's a great answer, Nate.
Thanks,
that's
guys.
Exactly.
An echo of the answer. Yeah,
appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I do think that he's a more intimidating presence on the field.
Yeah.
You can probably get some scouts in here or coaches, and they'll tell us about how Patrick Peterson is a better player. And I mean, Peterson's been in the league 6 years, and he's been a Pro Bowler every year.
Right.
I think. So, I mean, he's elite. And maybe he would be the better guy to have because he can return punts. I think that he's a little more versatile in where you can put him on the field, slide him inside, play him on either side. Richard Sherman kind of hangs out on one side all the time. But in as far as intimidation goes, I think if you had Rhodes and Sherman, two big physical corners that could just you stick Sherman over here on the left and you put Rhodes on the right and you're good. I think that's the more intimidating duo.
That'd be fun. I'm just thinking about that now.
Wouldn't that be kind of cool?
Yeah.
I mean, the two of them together would be fantastic.
Yeah. Would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
In researching that one, Rhodes and Peterson are the same age, even though Peterson has been in the league for 2 more years.
Interesting.
That was interesting when we found that.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch, what was the Arizona Cardinals documentary on Amazon?
All or Nothing.
Did you guys watch that?
I did not.
Yeah.
Was it good?
It was really good.
Yeah. Now I'm going to have to write it down.
You should watch it. It was very good. But Patrick Peterson is one who came off very well in that series.
Sure.
He just came off as very personable and funny and gregarious and lighthearted and kind of a fun guy to have around. He's a stud. So I wonder if they've, because that kind of snuck up on me. Like I didn't, like you always know they're doing Hard Knocks.
Right.
You know they're doing it and you know which team is being done. The All or Nothing thing was just like the season was over and all of a sudden was like, yeah, we followed the Cardinals around all year. I wonder if they did that this year.
Maybe they did it for us. We didn't even know.
We just didn't know.
That's how good they are.
If we all need to be evaluated,
right?
If that happened and the three of us didn't know,
right?
We have problems. Yeah. All right, that's it for the Wobcast. Thank you, Lindsay.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You bet. Great contributions. Good job at the Pro Bowl.
Thanks.
And I wanted you to tell the Pro Bowl, the funny Pro Bowl story.
Which funny Pro Bowl story?
The pancake story.
Oh.
Please tell the story. Do you know this, Nate?
I've definitely not heard it from Lindsay. Okay.
So for everyone who's stuck around this edition of the Wobcast long enough to hear the end of it, you're being treated to a funny story by Lindsay from her time at the Pro Bowl.
Okay. So, on Saturday morning, down in Pro Bowl, me and the other Viking staff members went to go and have a brunch, and they had, you know, all of this different food and they had a pancake bar. And to add to the story, I'm just going to say I'm on a low-carb diet, all right? I'm just going to put it out there. But I was like, pancake bar? Like, right. I'm in Orlando. Like, I have to have a pancake. So then I went up there. I realized that they make Mickey Mouse pancakes, all right? I love Disney. I'm already sold. Like, right. I'm in line. I'm like, well, if I'm going to break my diet, I might as well go Mickey Mouse. And you know what? I might as well go all the way and add chocolate chips to it. Let's just go big or go home.
You're in a great spot. Love
so
this.
I'm just ordering, like, the most childlike pancake you could ever have. And I had like a Viking something on, and these two fans came over and were talking to me, and they're like, oh, are you a Vikings fan and whatever? We love the Vikings. We traveled here for the Pro Bowl. So I actually told them, you know, I work for the team. We're down here covering the Pro Bowl. So we started having this really professional adult conversation, and they're asking me all these questions about my job. And in the middle of our conversation, this lady like starts yelling, Mickey Mouse, chocolate chip, Mickey Mouse pancake, chocolate chip, Mickey Mouse pancake. And they kind of look at me and I'm like, yeah, that's me. And I just took my pancake and like did the little walk of shame back to my table. But it was worth it. It was really good.
And then you sat down and it was glorious.
It was fantastic. Yeah. Worth every bit.
All right. And the story is worth every second of hearing again for me. Yeah, thank you. All right. Good job, Nate. Thank you, Lindsay. That's it for this edition of the Wobcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week. Hope you guys have a good weekend. And until next week, we'll see you later. So, yeah, I started winning.